last class, we discussed about the Itihasas and Puranas, how they are called the fifth Vedas. And Jiva Swami gave different reasons. One is that they have the same source, they are coming from Lord Krishna.
Lord Krishna delightfully offered his respects and obeisances to Kunti and other elderly ladies of the palace. His younger sister, Subhadra, was also standing there with Draupadi, and both offered their respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of the Lord. At the indication of her mother-in-law, Draupadi brought clothing, ornaments, and garlands, and with this paraphernalia, they received the queens Rukmini, Satyabhama, Bhadra, Jambavati, Kalindi, Mitravinda, Lakshmana, and the devoted Satya. These principal queens of Lord Krishna were first received, and then the other queens were also offered a proper reception. King Yudhishthir arranged for Krishna's rest and saw that all who came along with him, namely his queens, his soldiers, his ministers, and his secretaries, were comfortably situated. He had arranged that they would experience a new feature of reception every day while staying as guests of the Pandavas. It was during this time that Lord Sri Krishna, with the help of Arjuna, allowed the fire god Agni to devour the Kandava forest for his satisfaction. During the forest fire, Krishna saved the demon Mayasura, who was hiding in the forest. Upon being saved, Mayasura felt obliged to the Pandavas and Lord Krishna, and he constructed a wonderful assembly house within the city of Hastinapur. To please King Yudhishthir, Lord Krishna remained in the city of Hastinapur for several months. During his stay, he enjoyed strolling here and there. He used to drive on chariots with Arjuna, and many warriors and soldiers used to follow them. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the third volume, second chapter of Krishna, Lord Krishna in Indraprastha City. And now, Chapter 3, Liberation of King Jarasandha. In the great assembly of respectable citizens, friends, relatives, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, in the presence of all, including his brothers, King Yudhisthira directly addressed Lord Krishna as follows. My dear Lord Krishna, the sacrifice known as Rajasuya Yajna is to be performed by the emperor, and it is considered the king of all sacrifices. By performing this sacrifice, I wish to satisfy all the demigods who are your empowered representatives within this material world, and I wish that you kindly help me in this great adventure so that it may be successfully executed. As far as the Pandavas are concerned, we have nothing to ask from the demigods. We are personally fully satisfied to be your devotees. As you say in the Bhagavad Gita, persons bewildered by material desires worship the demigods. But our purpose is different. I want to perform this Rajasuya sacrifice and invite the demigods to show them that they have no power independent of you. They are all your servants, and you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Foolish persons with a poor fund of knowledge consider your lordship an ordinary human being. Sometimes they try to find fault in you, and sometimes they defame you. Therefore, I wish to perform this Rajasuya Yajna. I wish to invite all the demigods, beginning from Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and other exalted chiefs of the heavenly planets, and in that great assembly of demigods from all parts of the universe, I want to substantiate that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that everyone is your servant. My dear Lord, those who are constantly in Krishna consciousness and who think of your lotus feet or your shoes are certainly freed from all contamination of material life. Persons who engage in your service in full Krishna consciousness, who meditate upon you only, or who offer prayers unto you, are purified souls. Being constantly engaged in Krishna conscious service, they are freed from the cycle of repeated birth and death. Or even if they do not desire to be freed from this material existence, or to enjoy material opulences, their desires are also fulfilled by their Krishna conscious activities. In fact, those who are pure devotees of your lotus feet have no desire for material opulences. As far as we are concerned, we are fully surrendered unto your lotus feet, and by your grace, we are so fortunate as to see you personally. Therefore, naturally, we have no desire for material opulences. The verdict of the Vedic wisdom is that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I want to establish this fact, and I also want to show the world the difference between accepting you as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and accepting you as an ordinary, powerful, historical person. I wish to show the world that one can attain the highest perfection of life simply by taking shelter at your lotus feet, exactly as one can satisfy the branches, twigs, leaves, and flowers of an entire tree simply by watering the roots. If one takes to Krishna consciousness, his life becomes fulfilled both materially and spiritually. This does not mean that you are partial to the Krishna conscious person and indifferent to the non-Krishna conscious person. You are equal to everyone. That is your declaration. You cannot be partial to one and not interested in others, for you sit in everyone's heart as the super soul and give everyone the respective results of his fruitive activities. You give every living entity the chance to enjoy this material world as he desires. As Supersoul, you sit in the body with the living entity, giving him the results of his own actions, as well as opportunities to turn toward your devotional service by developing Krishna consciousness. You openly declare that one should surrender unto you, giving up all other engagements, and that you will take charge of him, giving him relief from the reactions of all sins. You are like the desire tree in the heavenly planet, which awards benedictions according to one's desires. Everyone is free to achieve the highest perfection, but if one does not so desire, then your awarding of lesser benedictions is not due to partiality. On hearing this statement by King Yudhisthira, Lord Krishna replied as follows: My dear King Yudhisthira, O killer of enemies, O ideal justice personified, I completely support your decision to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. After you perform this great sacrifice, your good name will remain well established forever in the history of human civilization. My dear King, I may inform you that all the great sages, your forefathers, the demigods, and your relatives and friends, including me, desire that you perform this sacrifice, and I think that it will satisfy every living entity. But I request that you first conquer all the kings of the world and collect all the requisite paraphernalia for executing this great sacrifice. My dear King Yudhisthira, your four brothers are direct representatives of important demigods, like Varun and Indra. It is said that Bhima was born of the demigod Varun, and Arjuna was born of the demigod Indra, whereas King Yudhisthira himself was born of the demigod Yamaraj. Your brothers are great heroes, and you are the most pious and self-controlled king, and are therefore known as Dhammaraj. All of you are so qualified in devotional service to me that I have automatically been rivaled by you. Lord Krishna told King Yudhisthira that he is conquered by the love of one who has conquered his senses. One who has not conquered his senses cannot conquer the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the secret of devotional service. To conquer the senses means to engage them constantly in the service of the Lord. The specific qualification of all the Pandava brothers was that they always engage their senses in the Lord's service. One who thus engages his senses becomes purified. And with purified senses, the devotee can actually render loving transcendental service to the Lord and conquer him. Lord Krishna continued, There is no one in
the world. We, this bandar, that monkey, thing. He was committing offenses or punishment. So later on, he joined the company of all these demons. Santa, Duryodhana, Maidana, Kalyani, who were they were enemies of Krishna. So it was the result because he was committing offenses for Lakshmi. So that means if we are committing offenses for our Guru and Vaishnavas, what will happen? We'll get attracted to the association of those people who are against our Guru and Vaishnavas and who have ill feelings. So we'll gradually develop friendship with them, and then again, one day will happen, we'll just burst up and then we'll commit big offenses. We should be very careful. It will happen very gradually, very subtly. Also, that in the same manner, Nityanand Prabhu also, in his Ashtak, which is Bhajan Nityanandan, Bhajan Tarukandan, Nirvadi, in that Ashtak also, there's so many qualities of Nityanand Prabhu has been listed. So he's also very strict. Those who commit offenses, he wants to clear them up. And he gave an example of, he just spoke 2-3 lines, I could not gather the whole thing. I have not read that pastime of Srimati Samit, if you all know. He was speaking in the connection when this Ramchandra, the person who sent a prostitute for Haridas Thakur, when Nityanand Prabhu along with other devotees came to his house and he asked for a place for cooking, something like that, and he refused. He said that, oh, I don't have any place, and with their cows and they are putting gobar and all that, and I can't give it. So he said, oh, it's like that, then he said, it will become like this. So later on, all the Muslim people, they came and they chopped off cows in that place only, and they ate flesh, and this person was completely ruined. Just like that. And but later on we see also by his mercy, Raghunath Das Goswami, he got the mercy of Mahaprabhu Raghunath Das Goswami by the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. So then Krishna Kaviraj, that all of them, they're paying them by his mercy. Then he said, Rasanand Prabhu spoke this in the morning lecture, and he said, he confirmed this point. He said, Rasanand Prabhu spoke very well, that Lakshman, when with Ramchandra he came as a younger brother. So he had to do so many services for Ramchandra, and some of the services he never wanted to do, but still he had to perform those services because he was younger. Like, he never wanted to, when Ramchandra, when he fought with Raman and killed Raman, and Mother Sita, when she was brought back on this side of the ocean, and then they said that you have to prove yourself that your chastity has not been broken, and you have to go through fire and all that. So this fire, all the wood for fire was supposed to be put together by Lakshman. So Mother Sita ordered Lakshman to do, and Lakshman was looking towards Ramchandra, what is his mood, and he said yes to do like that. So from heart he never wanted to do this, but still he performed the service. And then later on, when he, Ramchandra, on that saying of one washerman, he said that now I will, Sita. And then that was also done by Lakshman. He has to take Sita to that jungle and to send to Valmiki. So he said, Lakshman never wanted to perform this service. So he said, now next time when I come, I'll come as your elder brother. And then I will tell you how to, I will not perform this kind of thing for you. So, but he said that we should be very careful in the sense that, we should understand one more point, that when Sita was in exile with Raman, she was in so much separation with Ram. But you think Ram was not in separation with Sita? Sita, later on, when Ramchandra left her and she went in jungle with Valmiki, then also she had Valmiki and her two sons specifying her separation from Ramchandra. And here, Ramchandra, who he had to specify his separation? He was burning always in separation, nobody was there. So Lakshman would say something, but still how long, how much he can specify. He's younger, so he said, I'll come next time in as a younger brother and make sure that you don't burn in so much separation. So he came as Baldev Prabhu, but still it was just like his serving mood again showing a more high degree of serving mood as the elder brother, not like small or this feeling to serve Krishna versus you. No, it increased. And then how we see? We see sometimes that in the whole their pastime and their leela, they form, sometimes we see some conflict between Baladev Prabhu and Krishna. For example, that he will sometimes he would favor Duryodhana, because Duryodhana has learned this Gada Yudha from Baladev Prabhu. So in the fight of Duryodhana and Bhima also, he was like favoring Duryodhana. And then when Krishna's sister Subhadra, he wanted that she should get married by Duryodhana, but Krishna wanted that she should get married by Arjuna. At that time also we see some sort of conflict between Baladev Prabhu, but we see that Baladev Prabhu, he agreed with Krishna's desire. So even though he's younger, but elder, but still his serving mood is that now he serves the innermost desires of Krishna. Apparently sometimes it may appear that he's against, but he's never against. I just spoke for Rasanand, just remember this. When Rasanand Prabhu spoke this thing in morning, then he very nicely took the example of Naveen Prabhu and Maharaj. He said, now Naveen Prabhu has brought this medicine for Maharaj, and then wants that Maharaj should take it right away because it's time for him, and Maharaj says, I'm not going to take because it's in the middle of the lecture. So apparently it appears that Naveen Prabhu is doing against Maharaj, but Naveen Prabhu wants that he should take it at this time because he must otherwise take it. So this is like that. Sometimes that it may appear that a servant or something like that is happening, but those who are on a exotic platform, they are confirmed that they are performing the innermost desire of their master.
Yeah. definitely agree with what I'm going to say.
So then he just spoke on this Guru Parampara. He spoke very solid point in the last regarding Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada's mission, his conviction. He was saying this, we should, the whole specific, whole Guru Parampara, coming down from Mahaprabhu and all that Parampara, each Guru is Satguru, all the Gurus. There is no Guru as unqualified Guru in our chain of Gurus. All were Satgurus till present today. And then we should have the same surrendered mood for them as we have for Baladev Prabhu. And they are empowered by Baladev Prabhu to deliver giving hand today. They are not all resources. But if you have whimsically feel that, oh, now I just keep up to my Guru and then above that Guru I am not going to follow. Or people in ISKCON, they are trying to say that our parampara is Rupa Nuga, now we'll make some new Nuga for A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Abhisharanam, and Swami Prabhupada. So
what does that mean? What does that mean? What does it mean?
Satguru. Sat means pure, bona fide. Bona fide, authentic, whatever. Bona fide is more good for translation. Anyway, so they are now having a very sort of whimsical approach towards this disciple standard move for A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. They are saying that as our parampara we call Rupa Nuga, we should have one Nuga for our Guru also. And then we should say, why if Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur can be called as Prabhupada, why our Guru cannot be called as Prabhupada? And they just want to do like this. So this is not service to their Guru, this is just killing their Guru. Because as soon as Guru is disconnected from the parampara, he is no more Guru. So this is not like that, we should be very careful. Conditioned souls, they do like this because they don't have mature knowledge and they are not well versed in the scriptures, they would approach in a whimsical way, but they will not do any damage to Guru. They will damage themselves and they will go back into the agreement of Maya. We should be very careful in that. So you all best know also that whatever Guru
his kingdom. Although Bali Maharaj was cheated, his reputation as a great devotee, able to give anything and everything in charity, is still glorified throughout the three worlds. Bali Maharaj could guess that the Brahmin was Lord Vishnu himself and had come to him just to take away his opulent kingdom on behalf of Indra. Bali's spiritual master and family priest, Shukracharya, repeatedly warned him about this, yet Bali did not hesitate to give in charity whatever the Brahmin wanted. And at last he gave up everything to that Brahmin. It is my strong determination, thought Jarasandha, that if I can achieve immortal reputation by sacrificing this perishable body, I must act for that purpose. The life of a Kshatriya who does not live for the benefit of the Brahmin is certainly condemned. Actually, King Jarasandha was very liberal in giving charity to Brahmins. And thus he informed Lord Krishna, Bhima, and Arjuna, my dear Brahmins, you may ask for me whatever you like. If you so desire, you may take my head also. I am prepared to give it. After this, Lord Krishna addressed Jarasandha as follows. My dear king, please note that we are not actually Brahmins, nor have we come to ask for foodstuffs or grains. We are all Kshatriyas, and we have come to beg a duel with you. We hope that you will agree to this proposal. You may note that here is the second son of King Pandu, Bhimasena, and the third son of Pandu, Arjuna. As for myself, you may know that I am your old enemy Krishna, the cousin of the Pandavas. When Lord Krishna disclosed their disguise, King Jarasandha began to laugh very loudly, and then in great anger and in a grave voice he exclaimed, "You fools! If you want to fight with me, I immediately grant your request. But Krishna, I know that you are a coward. I refuse to fight with you, because you become very confused when you face me in fighting. Out of fear of me, You left your own city, Mathura, and now you have taken shelter within the sea. Therefore, I must refuse to fight with you. As far as Arjuna is concerned, I know that he is younger than me and is not an equal fighter. I refuse to fight with him because he is not in any way an equal competitor. But as far as Bhimasena is concerned, I think he is a suitable competitor to fight with me. After speaking in this way, King Jarasandha immediately handed a very heavy club to Bhimasena. He himself took another, and all of them went outside the city walls to fight. Bhimasena and King Jarasandha engaged themselves in fighting, and with their respective clubs, which were as strong as thunderbolts, they began to strike one another very severely, both of them being eager to fight. They both were expert fighters with clubs, and their techniques of striking one another were so beautiful that they appeared to be two dramatic artists dancing on a stage. When the clubs of Jarasandha and Bhimasena loudly collided, they sounded like the impact of the big tusks of two fighting elephants, or like a thunderbolt in a flashing electrical storm. When two elephants fight together in a sugarcane field, each of them snatches a stick of sugarcane, and by catching it tightly in its trunk, strikes the other. At that time, the sugarcane becomes smashed by such heavy striking. Similarly, when both Bhimasena and Jarasandha were heavily striking each other with their clubs on different parts of their bodies, namely on the shoulders, on the arms, on the collarbone, on the chest, on the thighs, on the waist, and on the legs, both of their clubs became torn to pieces. In this way, all of the clubs used by Jarasandha and Bhimasena became ruined, and so the two enemies prepared to fight with their strong-fisted hands. Both Jarasandha and Bhimasena were very angry, and they began to smash each other with their fists. The striking of their fists sounded like the striking of iron bars, or like the sound of thunderbolts, and they appeared to be like two elephants fighting. Unfortunately, however, neither was able to defeat the other, for both were expert in fighting. Both were of equal strength, and their fighting techniques were also equal. Neither Jarasandha nor Bhimasena became fatigued or defeated in the fighting, although they struck each other continually. At the end of a day's fighting, both lived at night as friends in Jarasandha's palace, and the next day they fought again. In this way they passed 27 days in fighting. On the 28th day, Bhimasena told Krishna, "My dear Krishna, I must frankly admit that I cannot conquer Jarasandha." Lord Krishna, however, knew the mystery of Jarasandha's birth. Jarasandha was born in two different parts from two different mothers. When his father saw that the baby was useless, he threw the two parts in the forest, where they were later found by a black-hearted witch named Jara, who managed to join the two parts of the baby from top to bottom. Knowing this, Lord Krishna, therefore, also knew how to kill him. He hinted to Bhimasena that since Jarasandha was brought to life by the joining of the two parts of his body, he could be killed by the separation of these two parts. Thus, Lord Krishna transferred his power into the body of Bhimasena and informed him of the device by which Jarasandha could be killed. Lord Krishna picked up a twig from a tree, took it in his hand, and bifurcated it. In this way, he hinted to Bhimasena how Jarasandha could be killed. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is omnipotent, and if he wants to kill someone, no one can save that person. Similarly, if he wants to save someone, no one can kill him. Informed by the hints of Lord Krishna, Bhimasen immediately took hold of Jarasandha's leg and threw him to the ground. When Jarasandha fell, Bhimasen immediately pressed one of Jarasandha's legs to the ground and took hold of the other leg with his two hands. Catching Jarasandha in this way, he tore his body in two, beginning from the anus up to the head. As an elephant breaks the branches of a tree in two, Bhimasen separated the body of Jarasandha. The audience standing nearby saw that Jarasandha's body was now divided into two halves, so that each half had one leg, one thigh, one testicle, one breast, half a backbone, half a chest, one collarbone, one arm, one eye, one ear, and half a face. As soon as the news of Jarasandha's death was announced, all the citizens of Magadha began to cry, "Alas, alas," while Lord Krishna and Arjuna embraced Bhimasen to congratulate him. Although Jarasandha was killed, neither Krishna nor the two Pandava brothers made a claim to the throne. Their purpose in killing Jarasandha was to stop him from creating a disturbance to the proper discharge of world peace. A demon always creates disturbances, whereas a demigod always tries to keep peace in the world. The mission of Lord Krishna is to protect the righteous and kill the demons who disturb a peaceful situation. Therefore, Lord Krishna immediately called for the son of Jarasandha, whose name was Sahadev, and with due ritualistic ceremonies, the Lord asked him to occupy the seat of his father and reign over the kingdom peacefully. Lord Krishna is the master of the whole cosmic creation, and he wants everyone to live peacefully and execute Krishna consciousness. After installing Sahadev on the throne, he released all the kings and princes who had been imprisoned unnecessarily by Jarasandha. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the third volume, third chapter of Krishna, Liberation of King Jarasandha. And now chapter 4. Lord Krishna returns to the city of Hastinapur. The kings and princes released by Lord Krishna after the death of Jarasandha were rulers of different parts of the world. Jarasandha was so powerful in military strength that he had conquered all these princes and kings, numbering 20,800. They were all incarcerated within a mountain cave, especially constructed as a fort. And for a long time, they were kept in that situation. When they were released by the grace of Lord Krishna, they all looked very unhappy. Their garments were niggardly, and their faces were almost dried up for want of proper bodily care. They were very weak due to hunger, and their faces had lost all beauty and luster. Because of the king's long imprisonment, every part of their bodies had become slack and invalid. But although suffering in that miserable condition, they had the opportunity to think about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Now before them, they saw the color of the transcendental body of Lord Krishna, which resembled the hue of a newly arrived cloud in the sky. He appeared before them nicely covered by yellow silken garments, with four hands like Vishnu, and carrying the different symbols of the club, the conch shell, the disc, and the lotus flower. There were marks of golden lines on his chest, and the nipples of his breast appeared like the whorls of the lotus flower. His eyes appeared to spread like the petals of a lotus, and his smiling face exhibited the symbol of eternal peace and prosperity. His glittering earrings were set beautifully, and his helmet was bedecked with valuable jewels. The Lord's necklace of pearls and the bangles and bracelets nicely situated on his body all shone with a transcendental beauty. The Kaustubha jewel hanging on his chest glittered with great luster, and the Lord wore a beautiful flower garland. After so much distress, when the kings and princes saw Lord Krishna with his beautiful transcendental features, they looked upon him to their heart's content, as if drinking nectar through their eyes, licking his body with their tongues, smelling the aroma of his body with their noses, and embracing him with their arms. Just by dint of their being in front of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all reactions to their sinful activities were washed away. Therefore, without reservation, they surrendered themselves at the lotus feet of the Lord. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that unless one is freed from all sinful reactions, one cannot fully surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord. All the princes who saw Lord Krishna forgot all their past tribulations. With folded hands and with great devotion, they offered prayers to Lord Krishna as follows. Dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, Master of all demigods, you can immediately remove all your devotees' pangs because your devotees are fully surrendered unto you. O dear Lord Krishna, O eternal deity of transcendental bliss and knowledge, you are imperishable, and we offer our respectful obeisances unto your lotus feet. It is by your causeless mercy that we have been released from the imprisonment of Jarasandha. But now we pray that you release us from imprisonment within the illusory energy of material existence. Please stop our continuous cycle of birth and death. We now have sufficient experience of the miserable material life in which we are fully absorbed. And having tasted its bitterness, we have come to take shelter under your lotus feet. Dear Lord, O killer of the demon Madhu, we can now clearly see that Jarasandha was not at fault in the least. It is actually by your causeless mercy that we were bereft of our kingdom, because we were very proud of calling ourselves rulers and kings. A ruler or king who becomes too puffed up with false prestige and power gets no opportunity to understand his real constitutional position and eternal life. Under the influence of your illusory energy, such a foolish so-called ruler or king becomes falsely proud of his position, just like a foolish person who considers a mirage in the desert a reservoir of water. Foolish persons think that their material possessions will give them protection. Engaged in sense gratification, they falsely accept this material world as a place of eternal enjoyment. O Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, we must admit that before this, we were puffed up with our material opulences. Because we were all envious and wanted to conquer one another, we all engaged in fighting for supremacy, even at the cost of sacrificing the lives of many citizens. This is the disease of political power. As soon as a king or a nation becomes rich in material opulences, it wants to dominate other nations by military aggression. Similarly, mercantile men want to monopolize a certain type of business and control other mercantile groups. Degraded by false prestige and infatuated by material opulences, human society
wants to find serving Guru and serving his innermost desire, Manobhishta Seva, what he wants. Not serving him mystically or what I feel so. We have to understand what Guru desires. That is called Manobhishta Seva. Now,
request has come.
It is Pitta Yamana.
So, although we say service is very simple, it's very easy to perform, but it is only for innocent souls, or in the sense those whose heart are not polluted and they are not having any duality in themselves. Pure, simple hearted person, bhakti is very simple for them and seva is also very simple for them. But for those people whose heart are contaminated with all kind of corruption and different kind of motives, it's very difficult. That's why I said it's very rare. So he cited one incident from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's life. It was before his passing away, just before he left and went into Vrindavan. All the big preachers at that time and all the big sannyasis, they stopped services, going on prachar or doing diksha, etc. Everything. They were just sitting in the mud. And the reason was that the manager at that time, he was a grahastha, and what he was doing, that all the collection which these people were doing, and so much hard effort they were putting in collecting all those amounts, and he would send a big amount of their part to his home. And he was constructing a big palace like home for him, and also his children were getting so much good education, maybe somewhere in London and such like that. So all these nyasis and big people, they got annoyed. They said, how can we are collecting with so much hard effort and this person is just using for his sanctification? They all checked it and they stopped services. And they were all thinking that probably Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is unaware of this fact. Otherwise, why this thing would go on, continue. So they said, we should tell him and we should make him understand. He's not understanding. We are trying so much, but probably he's not understanding. So collectively, they represented Sridhar Maharaj and he went in front of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and he was walking and he just came, went to him and was standing in a very submissive posture. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur looked at him and said, oh, you want to say something? So it was just like they said, yes, come up, whatever you want to say. He said, then he said that I'm not sure if you're aware of the fact, but most of the senior people have stopped the services. They are not going on with preaching. And the reason is that the manager is sending most of the collection for his personal purposes, like constructing homes, etc. So they are all very resisting to this fact and they don't want to do service. So Prabhupada says that Thakur is curious. And he spoke, I wrote that line in Bangla, it says, Tomar kapale pore geche. So he's saying that your brain is also blasted, like a thunderbolt on your brain. All of them is, their brains are now out of the track. Your thoughts are gone like that. What for you come here? You come here, you came here, your only motive was to get Krishna consciousness from me. And you're not supposed to be involved in all kinds of financial matters. We are here neither to collect money nor to maintain this financial affair. For example, such a big affair, such a big mud, and we are having our branches expanding so much in numbers. And if any person do this job from outside, we would have to pay him more 4,000-5,000 rupees a month. Nobody would do it free. And for this reason, if he is taking some amount and he is doing so much of management and all that, then, and he is not taking Krishna's brain, which he should take from me, so then it is a matter of sorrow for us, that we should feel pity on him. We should say, oh, how unfortunate this soul is. He can get Krishna from him and he is just taking few paisas for that he is doing it. So all of your brains are out of order now. Like this, he spoke to Sridhar Maharaj and he pacified him. And Maharaj spoke, of course, on length on this topic, but this is as I told you. So he said, never try to teach your spiritual master. Specifically, when the spiritual master is such an elevated soul and he is a Sadguru, then don't try to make him understand. He has gone through all the stages. He has gone through this all stages and he knows. So if we try to teach him, then it's a big mistake. He started with that only. He spoke very, like a very taunting way. He said, when Sridhar Maharaj was saying this, what is this? Is this a faith on his Guru? So this is like lack of faith on the Guru. That means the Guru doesn't understand or Guru doesn't know this thing. So we should avoid this kind of things. Otherwise, it will become a very big offense. Then he also spoke in the same way. He said, just like we have so much apraap for the deity, similarly, Guru is non-different from deity. So in front of Guru also, we should not try to teach somebody.
in front of Guru, we should not try to give some mercy to somebody. In front of Guru, we should not try to correct somebody for his mistakes. All these things we should avoid. So it is otherwise disrespect to the Guru. It comes under Seva Aparadha. Otherwise, the Guru will become non-different. I mean, just ordinary person. What speciality does he have in me if I try to teach him? And then, also said, we see so many people serving, and they serve Guru like in so much standard mode, and they're serving for so many years, and we see in the end they will leave the Guru. Why? Because they have committed to this. Because living together for so much time, they develop familiarity. And then they think, oh, I didn't derive anything out of him, and he's this ordinary person, this I can do from somewhere else, I can retrust myself. So gradually the faith. Why? Because you're every day committing small offenses, small disobeying the orders, and gradually it increases, and a day comes, it becomes so big that you practically commit a big offense, and then as a result, you have to leave. We should be very careful. So he spoke little more, emphasizing on this topic only, and then later on, he turned on Nityananda Prabhu. And giving another example, he said Nityananda Prabhu, he along with Haridas Thakur, and they were going door to door, and they were Mahaprabhu told them to go to do Bhiksha. So they were begging. So what they were doing actually? Were they begging or they were giving to people? What's the secret? The secret is although they were doing like this, but they were not begging, they were giving Krishna consciousness. This because they knew this is the only way we can engage these people in Krishna consciousness. Because they feel so puffed up. So let me become so humble but engage them in Krishna. So it's very difficult to understand what is playing in Guru's mind. How he is going to engage in Krishna's service, he knows. He doesn't. So we should not try to always manipulate on his action. Sometimes if we drive some doubt in our mind that how this happened, so we can very submissively go and ask him, Guruji, why did you do it like this?